Now, Judy was saying to me just the other day that she was in the supermarket and looking at the shelves, and there was, this time of year, a whole row of Easter eggs. And when you think about it, these Easter eggs are supposed to have been laid by rabbits. And at the same time, if she had to happen to go down to the checkout counter and put a Bible on the checkout counter, and anybody had seen her do that, then she'd been looked at as askance. And if anybody knew that she was eating unleavened bread, or that we were eating unleavened bread, they would be looking at it with askance. But who is mad? That's the real question. And what I want to do today is I want to talk about the or stress the insanity that we find within the news today, and find that is leading this world. Because quite frankly, there are some insane things that are going on quite right now when you're looking at the news events. And we need to do that so that we can in fact turn fully ourselves to the way of truth and to the way of that is truly sound and of a truly sound mind at the Passover. When we look at the news, I mean, let's have a look at some of the trivial ones first of all. These are clipped from the paper today predominantly. This one, it was from today. It was playing the radio to horses. £99, please. It says, a woman who plays classical music to her horses to keep them calm has been told that she must play for a public performer's license. And Rosemary Greenway, 62, has been playing the radio to the animals at her stations for more than 20 years, saying that it helps to soothe them. And yet this particular government department has decided that, no, she's got to have a public performer's license to be able to play them to her horses. Now, it's only a matter of time before every cow cubicle in the country is going to go ahead and have the same thing, if that's the case. Because one thing that you do if you're milking cows is you play the radio as loud as possible. Because the only reason for doing that is to mask the sound of dropping buckets or anything else like that, so it keeps the cows calm. There's a madness there. There's a certain madness that we find in society. I mean, the classic one that happened the other day, a couple of days ago, is David Jason, who apparently had to apologize for an anti-racist joke that he'd told. Now, if you listen to the actual joke, and the joke it says, Sir David Jason, an actor, has apologized for a joke he made about Pakistanis during a live radio broadcast. Well, it wasn't about Pakistanis. He said the 68-year-old, 9-year-old star of Only Fools and Horses rang a phone line competition and was asked to suggest a question for the next caller. And he replied, what do you call a Pakistani cloakroom attendant? Adding the punchline, which is Mahatma Coat, and which what it is, it's a play, Mahatma Gandhi, from the Indian subcontinent. So it's Mahatma Coat, which I think was very, very funny. But apparently, it was stony silence. And it says this joke was condemned by race groups and media watchdogs. Muhammad Sharif of the Mohammedan Ramadan Foundation said that Sir David was out of touch with it, and so on about Pakistanis. Well, it's a load of nonsense. It wasn't about Pakistanis, it was just a play on words. Again, Mahatma Gandhi, Mahatma Coat, and it's as simple as that. And yet there is a madness in society that will go ahead and have this politically correct battleground that there. Here's another one, again, of the somewhat trivial, and yet it reflects something within the society itself. It says, a complaint, this is from a couple of days ago, complaint over gypsies, sorry, you're just racist. And it says, an elderly couple who complained in a survey about the mess left behind by traveller groups have been told their comments will be ignored because they were deemed to be racist. So in other words, they were asked, these questionnaires went round, these questioners went around to the various householders asking them about problems in local area, and they came up with something, well, the travellers are leaving all this rubbish lying around here, and, oh, well, that's struck off the list. We're not going to take any notice of that because it's racist. And it says they filled out a questionnaire created by the South East Anglian Regional Assembly on plans to create sites for gypsies and traveller groups. But the pensioners from Hampshire were shocked when they received a letter from Katrina Riddle Sears, Director of Planning, saying their views would be discounted because they were considered to be discriminatory. So it's because they commented about gypsies, therefore it was struck off. If we turn over to 2 Timothy chapter 1, we have got to all understand where a sound mind comes from, because there is only one source of it. And this is the problem. This is what we're looking at today in society. Because in 2 Timothy chapter 1, writing to the church, or writing to Timothy specifically within the church context, Paul says, whereof, in verse 6, I put you in remembrance that you stir up the gift of God which is in you by the putting on of my hands. So on the ordination, or perhaps in the baptism even, that Paul had actually laid hands on Timothy. And he says, for God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power, love, and a sound mind. At its very essence, the Spirit of God is a sound-minded spirit. It's going in a direction which is a godly direction. It's the direction of a creator. It's a direction, and all you've got to do is look around, and look around at the creation, and you can see a sound-mindedness throughout the creation. So when we're looking at these words, which have in fact flowed from that spirit, there is a sound-mindedness within them, and there's a certain respect for these words that is now gone in society. Another one you can put in your notes, I haven't got time to turn there, but John 10:10, where Christ talks about, I'm come that you may have life and may have that life more abundantly. There's a sound-mindedness in the kind of life that is being described. But if you turn over to Isaiah 14, in Isaiah 14, we see Satan and we see his mindset initially. And this same mindset, was fixed. His mindset is the same kind of mindset he's got now, where it says, how are you fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, in Isaiah 14:12. Son of the morning, how are you cut down to the ground that weakened the nations? For you've said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God, I will sit upon the mount of the congregation of the sides of the north, which is the site of God's throne. I will ascend above the height of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. He was so vain, so egotistical, that he was going to be like the Eternal himself. But it says, yet you will be brought down to Sheol, to the sides of the pit or the grave. So this mindset that he had was twisted. It was warped. It was deviant. It was, quite frankly, it was anything but sound-minded. It was madness. It was a madness to think that he would go ahead and knock his very creator off the throne. And yet he is the spirit of the power of the air, as it says in Ephesians 2:2, and he's deceived the whole world, as it says in Revelation 12:9. Now we can see that in a present society that, if you like, is broken. Going into certain areas that are more alarmist in that sense, here is one. It says, a whistleblowing teacher hit just the right note. Now, this is from a teacher who exposed the school violence on TV that was banned from the classroom. This was from Thursday, March the 26th. It says, Alex Dolan, this is Alex, a girl's name, Alex Dolan, a supply teacher, secretly recorded scenes of shocking disruption in four schools where she worked and passed the videos on to Channel 4 for a dispatches program. Her reward for this act of public service was to be banned from teaching for a year after being found guilty of professional misconduct by her professional body. In other words, again, where is the focus? The focus is on our professional body, the teachers. Protect the teachers from having the finger pointed at them. And this is from Simon Heffer on today's paper. He says that this is a disgrace. It says the government and its toadies and the educational establishment connive in various lies about our schools, such as they're providing a decent education and having rigorous standards. You see, that was being undermined. And what she was showing in graphic detail was undermining this lie that was going out. And it was more important to preserve the lie than to go ahead and get the situation sorted. Part of what Miss Dolan sought to do was to expose how bad schools sought to dupe Ofsted inspectors. These are the inspectors that inspect the standard of education, which is infinitely more serious matter than her supposedly betraying the, quote, trusts, unquote, of the little savages that she filmed. And then, some people do have the sense that you can see the problem. But the fact that anybody would go ahead and suspend a teacher for a year for allowing that to actually happen, for exposing what should be exposed. I was going to suggest that she should be appointed to a headship herself. In fact, the government should really make her a school inspector. And I think that's about true. But she hasn't. She's been banned. She's been banned from teaching for a year. because she had the temerity to go ahead and expose what needed to be exposed. Another one, which was a much sadder case, and another comment on society, where it says, "Our broken society helped to kill my son." It says, "The father of Jimmy Mizzen yesterday attacked Britain's culture of anger, selfishness and fear after seeing a school dropout jailed for murdering his son. Jake Fahir, a 19-year-old cannabis-smoking school dropout, slashed the former Roman Catholic altar boy's neck with a glass dish in a bakery last May. And Barry Mizzen, 57, that was his father, said, "This fellow was a time bomb waiting to happen. If he hadn't killed Jimmy, he would have killed somebody else." We are missing something in this country. This was a country of civility, with a sense of safety, fairness and respect. We're replacing that with a selfishness, anger and fear. You know, some people can see, they can see the problem. But, you know, in society generally, there is a madness, and the madness is springing from a mindset. It says the couple and seven of their remaining eight children were at court to see Fahir convicted of murder. And so these things are, you know, very serious. But again, turn over to Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1. We find here in Proverbs 1 what God has to say about sound-mindedness, about where the wisdom that we need actually needs to come from. And it's, if you like, tied also over to Psalm 111 as well. Psalm 111, if you want to put it in your notes, which talks about the fear of the eternal is the beginning of wisdom, it says in Psalm 111. But here it says, "The fear of the eternal is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of a father, and don't forsake the law of your mother." So here in Proverbs, and people did, they used to recognize the wisdom that was here within this book. And we, if you turn over just a few pages in Proverbs, it comments again over in Proverbs chapter 8, where wisdom is actually talking, in metaphorically talking. It's trying to express itself or herself to the world, and it says, "Oh, you simple, understand wisdom, you fools, be of an understanding heart," in verse 5. But it says in verse 13, "The fear of the eternal is to hate evil." If you're fearing the eternal, you will then hate evil, and you therefore get the balance correct. You start to get a sound-mindedness, a sound-minded approach to society and to the various things that go on in society. But we haven't got that fair-mindedness. We haven't got that kind of approach to the degree that we used to have. And therefore, we're getting things like Jimmy Mizzen, like the various absurd situations that I've gone ahead and relayed from. Literally, it was a trip through today's paper. I went through today's paper, tearing out the bits that just seemed absurd, seemed insane. And yet we're seeing it continually, this kind of mindset appearing within our papers. Now, this also goes into the present situation that the country and the world finds itself in, and this political madness that seems to be visible today. Here we see an unmitigated disaster. It says here about Mr. Brown, who is going to see various people around the world. And it says, when Gordon Brown left Heathrow on Tuesday morning, he was in high spirits. His aides were putting the finishing touches to the most pro-European address in his political career to MEPs. It would echo his well-received speech to the US Congress, Mr. Brown's supporters said. When Wednesday evening, number 10 aides were furious that the main item on the BBC News was comments from the Czech Prime Minister warning that the economic recovery plans were the way to hell. So in other words, they were furious because he'd been subverted. And it says, as Mr. Brown set off from New York to Brazil, the morning's newspapers were discreetly positioned in a different cabin. And we see the world, if you like, collapsing. And yet, what is important in so many politicians' eyes is, in fact, am I appearing correct? Am I appearing the way I need to appear? Is this what I need to have in front of the public so I can get re-elected? Another one, the PM set on defying the bank's alert. The Prime Minister will push ahead with more stimulus measures for the economy despite warnings from the Governor of the Bank of England. He says, on Tuesday, Mervyn King, the Governor of the Bank of England, said that Britain could not afford further tax cuts or public spending rises. But Mr. Brown, who returns to Britain tomorrow, said, quote, I think what Mr. Mervyn King was saying is what I've always said, that you've got to be cautious about everything that you do. Well, that's not true. That's not what he said at all. He said, look, we can't afford further tax cuts. That was very, very specific what was being said. And yet again, the spin and the rhetoric that we find doesn't reflect the reality. Another comment on this same problem that is, you know, we find in society and in this financial area, particularly as far as Britain is concerned, was again Mervyn's dose of reality for the man who, quote, saved the world. Now, Mr. Brown made a comment inadvertently about us saving the world, where he's really meant for saving the banks, and he's lived to regret ever making that comment in the House of Commons. But it says, this week, a remarkable shift of power has taken place. The nation's central banker is telling the nation's prime minister in public what to do, or rather what not to do. In theory, this is a bad situation for a central banker to be in. It ought to be easy for a Labour Prime Minister to denounce the unelected Governor of the Bank of England for standing in the way of the needs of the British people. No doubt we shall hear a great deal of that from the left. But Mr. Brown dare not say it. He clearly does, long to borrow and spend even more money. His globe-trotting in the run-up to the G20 was designed to persuade others to do the same. But this can only work so long as people accept his own credit and therefore that of his currency, like a respectable bank manager in the days when there were such things. Mervyn King quietly but firmly told Mr. Brown that he simply hadn't got any more money for further brilliant schemes. The gilts market noticed. Now, what basically happened was that the gilts are government bonds that are sold to raise money for governments. And these gilts, the reason why they're called gilt is the gilt-edged securities. In other words, short of the country going completely belly up, which obviously doesn't happen, in quotes, they're absolutely rock solid. They're gilt-edged. But in fact, what had happened, and this was the article I was looking for, and I don't know where on earth, I must have left it somewhere. What's happened is that the gilts were they were offered for sale, and yet because there are so many other countries also wanting to raise money, raise capital, everybody else is doing the same across the world, and the British gilts therefore were not sold. They weren't completely sold. Now, what that means therefore is the government doesn't have the money to do what it needs to do or feels it needs to do, and it then has got to go and borrow money from another, or be bailed out by another country, or by the IMF, basically, isn't it? So it says, the gilt market noticed, and so Mr. Brown was stopped in his tracks. Until then, he had been speaking about wonderful, exciting new global plans for more fiscal stimulus. Suddenly, he was to pretend that this is just what had been agreed already, rather this the new stuff. It says, why did Mr. King dare to speak up? Partly, I think, because he's not alone. Almost anyone you talk to, whether from bank, treasury or financial service authority, is seriously worried about Mr. Brown. Most think that he's a clever, even a brilliant man. Many think that his rescue plans are broadly right, but they also doubt his judgment. They're perplexed by his obsessive obstinacy about minor details, and they fear his political calculation overtaking his economic rationality. They doubt his grasp of reality. You know, this is the problem. There is a certain madness there. Where is it coming from? Well, it's coming from this individual who felt that he could go up to God's throne, knock God off his throne, and take over. That is a mad, it's an insane way of an approach. And what we will see progressively as Satan... turn over to Revelation 12. Turn over to Revelation 12. It says in verse 9, it says, the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out to the earth, and his angels, or his demons, therefore, were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, Now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God, the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of their testimony. It's the word of God that is their testimony. And they loved not their lives to the death. They got the priorities sorted out. They made sure that the priority was this word. It was, in fact, the blood of the Lamb covering sin and then the word of God leading thereafter. Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time. So this attitude of mind, which is an insane attitude, when we are reading our newspapers, we will see that attitude continually being present. And it's going to progressively become more and more so as time goes on. And this is the source of it. This is where it's coming from. It's coming from a being who felt it logical to go and knock God off his throne. That is an insane concept, completely insane concept. And yet that is the way in which his mind is set. And therefore, the spirit that is being broadcast to this world will have that same insane concept. It's a self-centered concept that then is so blinkered and so self-centered that all the rest, which is wisdom, is just simply left to one side. So as we read the newspapers, let's make sure that we do read them wisely and read them with an understanding mind. And that understanding mind is the insanity, that a spiritual insanity that is really behind them.